Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh,
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, today's It's My House. Live stream is titled LaTosha Harlan's 5,907 Miles to Five Floors. LaTosha Harlan's 5,907 Miles to Five Floors. 619-768-2945 is the live stream call-in number if you want to participate or offer any comments. I'm going to play some audios to explain who, to tell you who LaTosha Harlan was, and particularly in relationship to the figure of 5,907 miles.
This grainy security camera videotape graphically depicts the last few moments of 15-year-old LaTosha Harlan's life.
Store owner Soonja Du thought 15-year-old LaTosha Harlan was going to steal some orange juice.
She had the money in her hand. You can see the money in the videotape. And the suspect grabbed the backpack, and there became a physical altercation over the backpack. And as our victim turned to walk away from the scene, the suspect raised a weapon and shot the victim in the back of the head.
LaTosha was an A student, honor roll student. She got money every week for her allowance, so she did not have to steal orange juice.
The store clerk, a Korean woman, is now in jail. The black community is outraged over the killing. The NAACP is demanding the clerk be tried for murder.
Stop killing our children! We want justice! please read the verdict? The title of court and cause. We, the jury, through the other kind of action, find the defendant, Sun Jia-Du, guilty of voluntary manslaughter in violation of Penal Code Section 192A.
It is not a time for rhetoric, which serves no purpose other than to fuel the fire. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire that's already burning. It is my opinion that Mrs. Du is not a danger to the community and that she is not going to reoffend. I know a criminal when I see one. I know a person who presents a danger to the community when I see one. When I don't, I treat that person as something other than that.
Murder.
I damn sure hope so, that there would be all the hell in the black community.
Somebody would care.
So stand up and see this insanity
people
exactly what it is. Black people once again being unjustly treated by this damn
people. We don't pick cotton anymore and cut sugar cane. Our lives is not worth anything.
People don't know who she was as an individual. They don't know. They just know that she was just a young black girl who was worth $1.79. They don't know. Latasha would always talk about when we got older, we could own businesses. Because every time we go into a store, they either following us, giving us dirty looks, disrespecting us. Don't you want to have something on your own? She wanted to be a lawyer, so that's what she was aiming for, to get good grades. She had all A's. She just tried a little bit harder. She just didn't want to end up a statistic. Sometimes I think, how did I get this far? And she not here. I know she'd be married by now. She loved the fellas. She probably would have two, three kids by now. She'd be an awesome mother. She was a loving person. I still appreciate her for being who she was back then.
Today's podcast is titled Latasha Harlins, 5,907 miles to fly floors. The question of the day is, did black folks kill Latasha Harlins? Once again, did black folks kill Latasha Harlins?
In 1992, the Los Angeles riots tore through the city, bringing complete destruction to the community and its businesses. As the world watched, news stations played over and over again the brutal video of Rodney King being beaten by the police and the acquittal that came a year later, leading most to believe that this was the only reason behind the city's anger. But what so many people didn't see on the news was that just 2 weeks after the Rodney King beating, there was another brutality caught on camera, one that fueled racial tensions in LA and had rioters shouting the name Latasha Harlins. Latasha Harlins was born in Illinois on January 1, 1976. When she was five, her mother and father moved the family to Los Angeles, California, in the south area of LA. But just 2 years after the move, Latasha's parents got a divorce. Her father left town, and Latasha and her two younger siblings stayed with their mother. Tragically, not long after, Latasha's mother was found murdered outside of an LA nightclub. Latasha was 9 years old. After her mother's death, Latasha was put in the care of her grandmother and aunt, who raised her and her brother and sister. As a kid, Latasha was described as being fun and full of energy. She was an honor roll student and had dreams of becoming a lawyer. But on March 16, 1991, those dreams came to an end. It was Saturday morning in Los Angeles. The city of LA had been on edge for weeks, ever since the police beating video of Rodney King was released to the news media just 13 days earlier. 15-year-old Latasha Harlins, who lived in South Central, decided to stop at the Empire Market near her house to get some orange juice. Empire Market was owned by Korean husband and wife Billy Hwang Kai Do and Sunya Do. The couple had bought the mini market a few years earlier and was just one of a number of Korean families who had been purchasing businesses in South Central neighborhoods since the early 1980s. Normally, Billy Hwang Kai ran the front of the store with his son, but that morning he was working on the outside of the market, so his wife Sunya Do was at the register. At around 10 a.m., Latasha entered Empire Market and immediately walked to the back refrigerator section of the store and grabbed a small $1.79 bottle of orange juice from the cooler. Latasha put the orange juice in the back pocket of her backpack and proceeded to the front counter with $2 in her hand. But before Latasha had a chance to show her money, Sunya Do accused her of trying to steal the juice. Sunya reached over the counter and grabbed Latasha's backpack. Latasha pushed back. Sunya then grabbed Latasha's sweater, and Latasha pushed back again, knocking Sunya down. Attempting to end the confrontation, Latasha tossed the bottle of oranges on the counter and walked towards the door. Seconds later, Sunya reached under the register, grabbed a .38 caliber handgun, and fired, hitting Latasha in the back of the head and killing her instantly. Court documents later revealed that Latasha had died with the $2 still in her hand. The entire incident was caught on surveillance camera. The killing of Latasha Harlins added to the already tense relationships between African Americans and Korean Americans in South Central during the 80s. In the book, The Contested Murder of Latasha Harlins, author Brenda Stevenson noted that tensions had been building for years between the majority black community who lived in South LA and the Koreans who ran businesses there. Korean store owners believed black customers were dangerous and more likely to shoplift, while black customers accused Korean store owners of being racist and disrespectful. These beliefs from each side created anger and hostility in the community that sometimes turned violent. As the public debated both sides, Sunya Do and the case of Latasha Harlins went to trial. 51-year-old Sunya testified on her own behalf, claiming that the shooting was in self-defense and that she believed her life was in danger. Court documents show Sunya testified that although she could see the orange juice in Latasha Harlins' backpack, she remained suspicious, feeling that if Latasha had intended to pay for the juice, she would have had the bottle in her hand. Security footage proved Sunya's claim of shoplifting to be false, as it showed Latasha approaching the register to pay for the juice. The security footage also contradicted Sunya's claim of self-defense, as the video showed Latasha walking away during the time of her death. The jury found Sunya Do guilty of voluntary manslaughter and recommended the maximum sentence of 16 years. However, the trial judge, Joyce Carlin, threw out the jury's sentencing recommendation and instead sentenced Sunya to 5 years of probation, 400 hours of community service, and a $500 fine. Sunya received no jail time. Judge Joyce Carlin explained her decision in a statement at sentencing, saying, "Did Ms. Do react inappropriately to Latasha Harlins? Absolutely. But was that overreaction understandable? I think it was." Judge Carlin added that she believed it unlikely that Sunya would ever commit a serious crime again. After Sunya's sentencing, Latasha Harlins' family, as well as the community, was outraged. Denise Harlins, Latasha's aunt, held marches and protests demanding justice for her niece. But later, a state appeals court unanimously upheld Judge Carlin's sentencing. This intensified the feelings in the community of anger and frustration with the criminal justice system. The LAPD tried to calm tensions throughout the city by disputing reports that Latasha's shooting was racially motivated. And the president of the National Korean American Grocers Association released a statement asking the public to see the incident as a dispute between store owner and customer and not a racial event. But these statements only caused more racial divide. 6 months later, in April of 1992, while the Latasha Harlins verdict was still fresh on everyone's mind, the Rodney King verdict was announced. Not guilty. Within hours, violence erupted on the streets of South LA and quickly spread to Koreatown. By the time the riots ended, 5 days later, more than 60 people had been killed. Over 2,000 were injured, and nearly 6,000 looters and arsonists were arrested. The rioting destroyed Koreatown. It's estimated that almost 3,000 buildings were damaged or destroyed, and that approximately 2,000 of those buildings were Korean-owned. Sun Yadu and her husband's store was one of those businesses. Empire Market was looted and burned to the ground, and it never reopened. Following the riots, the LA Times reported that the LAPD blamed the city's unrest on the Rodney King verdict, but that most Koreans believed that they were targeted because of the death of Latasha Harlins. Despite this, months after the riots, leaders from both the African American community and the Korean American community got together calling for a time of healing. And over 30,000 demonstrators gathered in the same spot the riots took place, marching for racial solidarity. It's now been almost 30 years since Latasha Harlins was killed. Her story has inspired numerous books, movies, documentaries, and songs, with the most notable being Tupac's song, Thug's Mansion. Latasha Harlins is now remembered not as a symbol of hate, but as a symbol of why we need peace. And to this day, Latasha's family still holds a vigil every year in her memory, bringing awareness to what racial divide can cause, if not addressed.
All this racism and hate going on and people being pitted against each other. Please don't believe the hype. Support one another, all nationalities, because we're going to need it.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't
be your own self. You from New State.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization, as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, The Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087, this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old. And I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
All right, today's podcast is titled LaTosha Harlan's 5,907 Miles to Five Floors. Now, for the people that missed the beginning of the podcast that gave you a little heads up on who LaTosha Harlan was, let me go from Wikipedia. LaTosha Harlan, sunrise January 1st, 1976. And she transferred 1991. Briefly killed by Soon Ja Doo, a 51-year-old Korean-American convenience store owner, and she owned that store in a black neighborhood. Doo was tried and convicted of voluntary manslaughter and Harlan's death. although the maximum sentence was 16 years, Judge George Carlin sentenced due to time served, 5 years of probation, 400 hours of community service, and a $500 restitution, and funeral expenses. The death of Latasha Harris, which was recorded on security footage, and the latest sentencing failed to appeal, are considered to have contributed to the 1992 Los Angeles riots, especially the targeting of Koreatown, Los Angeles. Harlan's death came 13 days after the videotape beating of Rodney King. Okay, now, I'm skipping down here a little bit. Soon Ja Do, one of the store owners of Empire Liquor, located at the intersection of 91st and Figueroa Avenue, Vermont Vista, Los Angeles, was normally staffed by Do's husband and son. However, on the morning of the shooting, Do was working behind the counter and her husband was outside resting in the family van. Now, the question of the day I've posted here on Blog Talk Radio, particularly with this case, is the question is, did black people kill Latasha Harlins? We know who pulled the trigger. Soon Ja Do. But who placed the gun in her hand and helped her pull the trigger? Did the black community in that neighborhood kill Latasha Harlins? That's the question of the day. And that's why I play today, and I play it often, Ballin' on Baltic, because Soon Ja Do and her husband and son, a family, traveled from Korea, South Korea, to Los Angeles, California, is 5,907 miles. They traveled all that distance to take advantage of a gold mine opportunity by owning a liquor store in a black neighborhood here in the United States. Whereas you had several, and still do, black churches in the same neighborhood. That didn't purchase this liquor store. So once again, if you don't solve your own problems in your community, then that opens up the door. You open up the door to let other people come into your community to solve your problems. Now, Pastor, people are going to drink. Matter of fact, a lot of pastors drink. Liquor stores, it's a cash business. It's also a de facto bank for many people that live in those neighborhoods because a lot of people take their checks there and they cash those checks at the neighborhood liquor store. It's a de facto convenience store. They don't have to get on a bus or take a cab or whatever. It's take a few steps, walk down the street, walk around the corner. You can go buy your orange juice because that's what she was buying. It might be a little bit more expensive, but that's why they call it a convenience store because people are willing to pay for convenience. So I don't have to go across town or catch the bus or get in my car or whatever. It's convenience. They charge a little bit more. And basically everybody goes along with that. Most people are willing to pay for the convenience. So the number of black churches in that neighborhood, in my opinion, they killed LaTosha Harlins. Because they didn't get together, and it only takes one of them to buy the store. Then you had, you know, you got block captains on throughout that neighborhood. Why didn't they get together? And a block or two or subdivision, let's get together, buy that convenience store. We shop there anyway. Let's get together and buy the store. They didn't do it. They're the ones that by you not buying that store, you place the opportunity, you place the gun. Somebody else pulled the trigger, but in my opinion, black people killed LaTosha Harlins in that particular neighborhood. That somebody else pulled the trigger. But you helped them pull the trigger by not buying the store. And Los Angeles is one of the most, you got quite a few black folks that live in Los Angeles. Los Angeles proper. I'm not even going to go into the metro area. Let's see. God knows I had the stat. But when you guys, I guess you guys can do it on your own. Look up how many churches are in Los Angeles. Let's look up, or synagogues, or mosques. Take your pick. That have a predominantly black congregation. And what's interesting, if you take LaTosha Harlins, that's 1991. And with the George Floyd case, because you have foreign people that it's the store in where George Floyd got killed, outside of it. He didn't get killed in the store, but outside where the whole thing triggered off. It's third generation immigrant. Third generation. So here are two instances where we're talking about several years apart. We've had, I don't know when the first Million Man March was, but it was 20 years difference between the two. Okay. It's 30 years between George Floyd and LaTosha Harlins. Now, these are just high-profile cases. There are other cases that are not high-profile. 30 years, 2 million man marches. How many convenience stores or liquor stores have we bought using cooperative economics? There might be some that I don't know about. 619-768-2945. Please call if you know of any. And once again, the question of the day is, did black folks kill LaTosha Harlins? We know that black folks didn't pull the trigger. But once again, these Koreans, a Korean family, you know, they heard about business opportunities over here in black neighborhoods. That was their American dream. Their American dream was to own a liquor store in a black neighborhood, and I'm sure they talked to other people who own liquor stores in black neighborhoods, and they networked with other Koreans that traveled that distance, and they were giving their success stories, and they saw the trinkets and the nice house and the car and all this. They were living the American dream. And a black man. How come black people can't see the American dream in their own neighborhoods? people that don't have to travel over 5,000 miles to get there. Some of these people live 5 steps away from this place, let alone 5 miles away. Instead of going for reparations, in my opinion, you need to get your priorities together and buy assets in your own community. But anyway, 619-768-2945, what say you? Did black folks kill Latasha Harlins?
Why are we the victims? My friends are good Christians. I mean, we've been through so much and to go through this. I mean, everything, 22 years down the drain.
Many Koreans who yesterday were the shopkeepers of South Central Los Angeles today have lost the businesses they took years to create.
What can I say? I don't have any words to say. That's really a comeback, John.
George Huang woke this morning to find his mini mall burnt to the ground, a loss of $1.5 million and a lifetime of dreams and effort.
I don't mind that. Whatever they need, take it out. But why they burn out the property? That's my question.
41 Korean businesses in South Central have been torched, dozens looted. In this overwhelmingly black and Hispanic area, Koreans own many of the small businesses. They're insular. They employ their own. They keep to themselves. Blacks say that's the problem.
I'm not surprised that the Koreans got targeted because their prices are high, their attitude is wrong, and they just don't seem to have any respect for the black community.
You know how it all started? The first thing when a girl got killed, from the Oriental.
March 16, 1991. Latasha Harlins, a black teenager, is shot and killed by a Korean store owner, Soonja Doo. Doo is convicted of voluntary manslaughter, but is sentenced only to parole and a small fine. The black community is outraged and remembers.
What, 6 months probation? Yes. I mean, the people were pissed then.
Today, local Korean radio is broadcasting which stores in the area are threatened. Young men like Eddie Kim rush over to try to defend them.
I don't care about the racism, I don't care anything. But it's not right, okay? It's not right to break inside and get any stuff.
Yep. It's not right. I don't think it's right.
He Lee spent last night and will spend tonight guarding his appliance store. A small battalion of employees and relatives will try to help.
I only have one shotgun. That's all I have. What do they have? They have hundreds of crazy people, hundreds of crazy young people with lots of guns.
After the destruction, many Koreans have lost all faith that the authorities can protect them.
Well, we hope police can protect, but as you see, this shortage of manpower, police.
Koreans have fanned out across South Central, worried that tonight, with so little left to loot, more of their stores will burn. But even in the midst of the chaos, John Wee is rebuilding.
We will continue to serve this community by doing the proper way of business. I don't think this is the will of the majority of this community.
Hey, NBC News fans, thanks for checking out our YouTube channel. Subscribe by clicking on that button down here and click on any of the videos over here to watch the latest interviews, show highlights, and digital exclusives. Thanks for watching.
Now we're going to go over to Africa where we're going to listen to some Koreans who were born in Uganda and do business in Uganda.
We get our own room. That's so cool. Oh, my gosh. It's so nice.
Yes.
Awesome.
Have a seat.
Yeah.
Very colorful today, man.
Africa, baby.
The land of colors. Land of color.
Nice to meet you guys. My name is Elijah. People call me Suwan in Korea. I grew up in Uganda. Moved back to Korea around 2005, around when I was around 12. And I've lived in Korea ever since. Had to go back to Uganda to visit because I was getting too homesick. So Uganda is my hometown.
Nze Josh, ngizakuku soma u Uganda.
Zakukuba.
Yeah, zakukuba, yeah.
Okay, if I were to answer that question, it depends on where I am. If I were to be in Uganda and people ask me that, I would tell them I am from Bunamaya, which is the small area in the Kampala district where my house, our old hometown house, used to be. But if people ask me where I'm from in Korea,
Then you just don't know what you're saying.
Yeah. I guess I tell them I'm from Yongin. Yeah.
So I lived there around 8 to 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I also studied in Kenya, boarding school in Kenya, for around 6 months, 7 months. And this guy lived a lot longer than me.
So I think the first time I set foot in Uganda was 1994. My parents were visiting.
Yeah.
Then my folks decided to stay there long term. So we stayed there 6 months or so in 1994. So long term, I came to Uganda in 1996. And since then, till 2010, as a student. And then after that, I came back for this last year. And like between then, I went back and forth. And so it's hard to say exactly how long in terms of numerical data, but it's been a long time.
Do you guys have any culture shocks? For Josh, when you moved to America, and then for Suhan, when you came to Korea.
Yeah, I have a funny story for you guys. Okay, so basically, when I was in Africa, one of the things that we used to do for fun, because my school was in the middle of nowhere, we would hunt. We just chase animals on motorcycles sometimes, or shoot baboons with arrows. That was kind of a normal thing. I remember one of the guys that I went to high school with went to the same college as myself. So I was a senior in high school about to go to the same college that this friend was in. He was also a great hunter. Like, that's what he did when he was in Africa. And so he took his Maasai bow and arrow to college in Michigan, in America.
Ooh.
And so one weekend he's bored, right? You know, like a lot of American colleges, they're very like nature friendly, and so they have
yeah.
these like small animals. He went out and hunted down this rabbit.
Oh, shit.
Shot it in the face next to a girl's dorm, built a fire there, ripped the bunny apart, and cooked it and ate it.
Really?
Yeah. True story. And so the girls obviously saw this happen, and I don't know if you guys know much about America, but they value animal lives over human lives. That's something you have to know about Americans. Yes, and so this guy's in trouble. Long story short, the government came and blah, 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 all this stuff. He had to use the African card. I just remember like talking to him, he's like, don't come to America. These people are crazy. The animals have rights here. So that was the first culture shock, because animals do not have rights. So
wow.
When I visited him in his college dorm, he had the certificate of warning from the government, and right
Ooh.
Next to it was the leather of the bunny that he killed, framed on the same wall.
My goodness,
so,
that's intense.
That was a funny story.
No hunting, no more.
Yeah, so apparently that's not a thing in America.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So culture shock, animal rights.
What about you, Elijah?
I think, the biggest, I mean, culture shocks I had to face and deal with and I had to struggle with were things that had to do with other people, my peers, my school peers. Because of, like, the very strict hierarchical culture Korea has, a one-year older kid is, like, you gotta treat him like the king of something.
Yeah.
Like, so the hierarchy is very big. You have to use a different language to them versus to your of the same hierarchy. So getting used to that was a huge struggle. There was absolutely none of that when I grew up in Uganda. That was the biggest struggle. Apart from that, all the obvious stuff, you know, all the technology, all the public transportation, all these like in Uganda you would get matatus, you would get boda boda, and you would ride on the back of trucks, pickup trucks. Those are very, very like natural, you know, stuff you see every day,
yeah.
like it's a day to day. Come to Korea, you're not allowed to ride it on the back of trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has trucks in the first
yeah,
place.
Yeah, nobody has trucks. And, yeah, like because you mentioned like chundema,
yeah.
the way you address people who's older than you. What's challenging for me is like I'm fine with that if I'm interacting with a person one on one. But the problem is if I enter like a college group. I am numerically, like, maybe I'm stupid numerically, but the fact that in Korea, like, because even now, a lot of my friends, I actually have no idea what their age is, because that's
mm-hmm.
information that I don't consider important,
yeah.
but in Korea, that's an information that's the first thing you ask,
yeah.
and you have to remember it.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the most challenging thing for me.
Yeah.
If you go to a big group, you have to remember, okay, that person's older than me, that person's younger than me, and that person who's older than me, and that person's older than the person that's older than me. So, like, he's young to him, and he's young, like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to remember
yeah.
everyone's age if you're in a big group. That's
yeah.
challenging.
Yeah.
Like,
it is. It really
yeah.
is.
Because, like, Jungnam itself, I think you get used to it pretty quickly, but the fact that if you're in a community, now you have to remember everyone's
yeah.
age, and that's just not normal
yeah.
in any other culture where, like, I have to
yeah.
keep track of everyone's age and have, in my mind, a mental picture of everyone from the oldest to the youngest.
And
that,
be mindful of that.
I cannot do
you
that.
Act accordingly,
yeah.
you know, all
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, so I see you guys are excited talking about the experiences and the life you have in Uganda and
it's
Kenya.
Hometown.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you miss most? And if you ever visit again, what's the first thing you do?
The first thing I'm going to do is get some matoke, because that's the only thing that I can think of right now. It's, oh man,
it's a very passionate
thing. Oh, matoke.
So to explain what this guy's crying about, it's a local food. It's actually quite luxurious food, not
fancy.
It's quite
yeah.
it's quite fancy. Not people don't eat it daily. They usually have it on like weddings and some kind of feast. But anyway, it's a way of making a mashed potato
out of
green bananas.
Banana.
That's basically the easiest way to describe it. It's like green bananas, but you steam it and you mash it like a mashed potato. It tastes great, but I think most Koreans don't like it. So it's an FYI. Don't
yeah.
don't be like, oh,
don't like
I was told that if I go to Uganda, I have to try matoke. You are in for a disappointment. You have to have this brought up there to enjoy it. That's what I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. You need to have that context of
exactly,
what
exactly.
it really
like,
means.
You can't expect
Uganda
a Westerner
culture.
To enjoy like kotoribu.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there are certain Korean food that you're like, you have to...
Yeah, cook. Sometimes it's tasteless.
Exactly,
right?
exactly.
Yeah.
Like. If you taste matoke, you might be like, wait, so what's so great about it? you really get that, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I miss the most.
What about you, Josh?
Oh, I'm trying
but you recently came back.
I did,
oh, yeah.
I did. So I'm just actually refreshing my memory. And what I really miss is the fact that, like, I mean, some people might think this is a bad thing. The town and the city is not organized in any way.
Mm.
Meaning, if you take this road, you have no idea where it's going to lead you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause
mm-hmm.
in most American cities, like, it is a grid structure, so you kind of
yeah.
know exactly, like, you can always, you're at the same place.
Where
yeah.
I'm heading.
But, like, in Uganda, it's like, if I go above that hill, I have no idea where it's
going
to lead
you. Maybe
I'll see. Yeah, I might end up in Congo, for all I care. You know, like, so I think that sense of, like, unknown, just because everything is so much more covered in nature,
mm.
I think that's what I really miss.
Oh, nice. Hey, Muzungus. So you guys have lived in Uganda for about 15?
Sure.
15,
I'll
16
say,
years?
I'll say 15 years, 16
and
years.
And you, around
9 years.
9 10
10.
Years, right? So for Suan, so if you stayed in Uganda for longer than you lived, so what would your life be right now?
You're looking at me if I stayed in Uganda. I think I can answer that question better for him.
Oh, for you, for him?
Yeah, for him. First of all, his habit of like exercising would be more like a lifestyle.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because we don't have anything else to do in Africa. Well, okay, I shouldn't say that Africa.
In Kenya.
In Kenya,
that's
in that
cool.
specific school, there really wasn't anything else to do. So we worked out for fun because otherwise we'd be bored and sitting in our rooms and twirling our thumbs. Like sports in that school was a huge thing. And I know this guy loves sports, but he just didn't grow up in a school
mm-hmm.
where that's a big culture.
Yeah.
And so for him, he always had the desire. It's just there wasn't others to share that with.
Mm-hmm.
So if he stayed in Africa, he would definitely be much sportier. For sure.
More athletic, more sports driven.
Yeah. Because
yeah.
I know he's always been interested. Like every time, like even when he came to visit in 2007, like he was interested in hanging out, working out, and just kind of engaging physically.
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah. Hey there.
Hey, you fat pigeon.
Like, seriously.
We're
like,
so fat.
Pigeons are
we're
the size
so
of chickens.
And
you
have no fear for you.
Yeah.
You have no rights. Yeah.
You have no
well, you
rights.
Think you do.
Yeah. I think that definitely is one thing. I
yeah, that is. Yeah, totally. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, everything him, basically, because we really grew up exactly in the same environment when we were in Uganda, and we moved at exactly the same time to Kenya. He just stayed in Kenya throughout, and I had to move out. So that was really the biggest change.
Mm-hmm.
And
what about you, Josh?
Yeah.
If you came to Korea, like around when you're like 15 years old,
I see.
And then you stayed here, and then you went to, if you went to Korean college,
mm.
what kind of person would you be?
Yeah, that's a great question, in which I actually have no idea how to answer. Here's the thing. For me, the only reason why I survive the Korean culture and the differences that I feel and the culture shock and the discrepancies that I feel, the only way I can survive it is because Suan has been around for such a long time. He is kind of like the cushion in between me and just the straightforward Korean culture. So if the question is, how would I have handled Korean culture if I didn't have Suan or anyone else, if I was just thrown in Korea, I don't know if I would have survived.
It would have been a lot tougher, I guess,
yeah.
for you to adjust to
yeah.
this whole
Because I mean, I also, I'm not a very rebellious type, so it's not like I would have told my parents I'm going to go back to Africa, but it's really hard to imagine myself if I just stuck in Korea, like what kind of person I would be. A very depressed person.
I think, yeah, he would have been a lot more gloomy.
Yeah.
Just overall.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see, I see.
I think, yeah, yeah, I think I'll be more depressed.
Yeah.
When I'm in Korea, I always feel like I'm doing like 85% of what I can actually do. Just because like what I can do and my abilities and the things I enjoy doing are just not very aligned with what the culture and the people in Korea are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, yeah.
The needs are not there.
Yeah.
Whereas
so,
if you go to Uganda, you need anything and everything.
Yeah.
So it really shines. Your talents shine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, I'm here hanging out with this Muzungus. Muzungus. I needed to ask some questions so that they can answer. Turns out they don't need someone to ask questions. They just talk. They never stop talking.
We have romantic.
If anything, I guess that just demonstrates that it makes us happy to talk about home.
Yeah, totally.
If anything,
that's
a clear demonstration.
We love Africa.
We take great pride in it. We take great pleasure in talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It is our root.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was a clip of some Koreans. Genetically Korean, but they're African. You were born in Uganda. But their parents or grandparents traveled several thousand miles for opportunities in Uganda and Kenya. Today's podcast is titled Latasha Harlan's 5,907 miles they traveled from Korea to, let's say, from Seoul, Korea to Los Angeles, distance over 5,900 miles, for the gold mine opportunity of opening up a liquor store, Empire Liquor, in Los Angeles, California. 15-year-old Latasha Harlins went into the convenience/liquor store to buy some orange juice. And matter of fact, if you go to our Facebook page, It's My House TV, that's It's My House TV, we got a video of that on that page, as well as the videos of everything we played today, except for Balling on Baltic. She had money, and the store owner just freaked out and thought she was stealing something and shot her dead. She was arrested, and the store owner was arrested, one of the co-owners of the store, because it was owned by three family members, her husband and her son. So, here's the outcome. On November 15th, 1991, a jury found that that's the lady that was convicted of killing Latasha Harlins. The decision to fire the gun was fully within her control, as she fired the gun voluntarily, and she was convicted of voluntary manslaughter. The jury found Du guilty of voluntary manslaughter, an offense that carries a maximum prison sentence of 16 years. Now, the sentence I'm about to read is why I play Ballin' on Baltic. However, the trial judge, Joyce Carlin, sentenced Du to 5 years probation, 10 years of a suspended sentence, 400 hours of community service, and a $500 fine. Another way to read that was she was sentenced She got 10 years, but 10 years suspended. So there was no jail. There was no immediate jail time. This, the community, the black community was outraged. Now, the reason why I play Ballin' on Baltic, and the reason why I play Claude Anderson to open up every, practically every podcast here on It's Miles over the last, we've been doing it 7 years, but we've probably been playing it, that opening with Claude Anderson for about five consecutive years. Is because what the Du family did, what the Korean business family did, or does, is floor number one, business and industries. They opened up, they had a liquor store. They traveled over 5,000, practically 6,000 miles to open up a liquor store in a black community. And they're not the only people. There's several other Koreans in that neck of the woods that did the exact same thing. They have a Korean business chamber of commerce, if you will. Floor one. Floor number one. Floor number two. And for number three, they, what do you call it, Claude Anderson says they buy or lease the local politicians, and they control the police department. And you may as well throw judges in there too. Not a judge. They go completely around the table. Thus, the sentence of 10 years suspended, 5 years of probation, 400 hours of community service, and a $500 fine. And the Harlan family, they had, I think they got awarded $300,000. Now, I wonder, what did they do with that $300,000? Did they open a business with that $300,000? The family of, what's that kid in Baltimore, Freddie Gray, they got $6 million. Of course, you know, the lawyer gets his third. So did they take at least $1 million and start, did that mother, did she open up a business? Mike Gray, well, no, Mike Brown, I don't think he qualifies for that. But, no. Mike Brown's mother's parents did get something. Did they start a business with the money that they received? George Floyd family received, $27 million. Of course, the lawyer's going to get their third. So do they have plans to start a business with that money that they've gotten? And we can go right on down the line. Once again, the question is today, a question today, did black people kill Latasha Harlins in that particular community? Because what if that business wasn't available to be purchased by Koreans? What if the local churches in that neighborhood purchased that building, purchased that business, and employed, and as a matter of fact, and employed, use that business, Empire Liquors, use that business to train people like Tasha Harlins to be business owners, employ black youth in the neighborhood. But now, what about that idea? I'm just saying. We know who pulled the trigger. But who killed him? In any event, we know there are a number of black entrepreneurs out there doing various things. That's all good. But I'm looking at it 30 years ago. You know, I'm looking at LaTosha Harlins as like an angel. Angels are messengers. 30 years later with George Floyd, here's another black person in another part of the United States that something went and left at a store, another convenience store, owned by third-generation immigrants. Nothing wrong with that. But, and who traveled thousands of miles to take advantage of an opportunity. But we don't see it. LaTosha Harlins, gone. And then, you know, I think the city of L.A., they named some kind of park after her. But it would have been a different situation had some black people in the neighborhood bought the store. That's why I don't understand the rioting and the looting and the burning down and all that stuff. Instead of destroying something, get your pennies together and buy the store. Partner up with them. Because you got Latinos and Asians, you know, I've seen them partner up to do a dry cleaner. Or they get a dollar store. So, black folk, partner up with some of these Koreans. Or Vietnamese or whatever, you know, whatever's out there. Anyway, I don't get it. 5,000 people. It's interesting. Somebody in Seoul, Korea, Saudi Arabia, Beijing, Shenzhen, China, Lagos, Nigeria, Nairobi, Kenya. You got people right now that can see the opportunities that are in these black neighborhoods here in the United States. But for some reason, on a critical mass basis, because everybody's different, on a critical mass basis, black folks can't see it. Anyway, 314, your mic is open.
You know, what was the sentence on that lady's
She got 10 years suspended along with paying funeral expenses, $400
so she didn't go to jail.
And a $500 fine.
She didn't go to jail.
Nope, no jail time.
What was your question? Who pulled the trigger? Who killed her?
Well, no, we know who pulled the trigger. The question was who killed LaTosha Harlins. Did black folks kill LaTosha Harlins? I'm saying they did because they didn't buy the business.
That Korean murdered LaTosha Harlins. That's what that was. That was murder. Black folks as a group didn't have nothing to do with that because they didn't own the store. Korean murdered LaTosha Harlins. And she should have done more than, I think, I don't know, maybe they was the sentence and rules was 16 years. She should have got all of those. It should have been first degree murder.
And
she's walking away.
That 10 years got suspended.
Well, the judge is a jack. You see that today. You see the same jack judges with Donald Trump. That's why I come out be making these comparisons. What goes on the court? judicial review.
Mm-hmm.
No, stick to the law. Stick to the Constitution. That's what the law says, 16 years. Not your opinion. They should have got the judge out of there if the judge was electable.
Now,
and it would have done blacks
that,
no good.
And the appeals court upheld the judge's decision.
Well, then you should have got the appeals judge out of there, too. They are elected.
Okay, well, now see that.
It was a swamp then, just like it's a swamp today.
All right, now, the only way that, well, not maybe not the only way, but that's why I play that Claude Anderson piece. Where are we in the process? Where are the black people that were in that Los Angeles community? Where
well, back
in
1991.
Process? Huh?
Yeah. 1991, blacks was not going to own. If they had owned the store, what would they have got the merchandise to stock the store? Koreans buy those buildings. They stock the stores with the merchandise that they build, or should I say produce, over in Korea.
Right. They do.
And they import it back into the United States.
They
That's
do.
Why it's so high. And they were not going to offer the same perks to a black American. Hell, they squeezed white Americans out of the hair care industry in that same area. They done documentaries
mm-hmm.
on it.
Well, is there any
so
hope
no,
for black
they,
folks then? When it comes to convenience
no,
stores
no,
in
it was
black
not the woman. The woman should have been put in jail, in prison. And the jury got it right. The prosecutor got it right for back in 1991. The judge was jacked then, just like judges are jacked today. And you have seen that most recently with Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
If you paid attention. I mean, some things is clear cut and dry. And those Koreans over there in Uganda, that's a joke too. I would get them out of there. But, you know, those people in Africa just don't have that type of audacity. I'm sorry to say.
Well, what about
making jokes? And, you know, here's another thing, too. It's within the culture of black society when they go in stores, as that girl did, the item that she's going to get, she'd put it in her backpack, then go pay for it. I've seen people open up items and start drinking them if it was liquid and get to the counter and pay for it.
I've seen that too.
So that's a lack of them understanding the culture, total culture, in the area where they are trying to set up business. Now, you know me, and you probably heard me say this, is that I think it's ridiculous for to allow foreigners to come into your community anyway, because you ain't gonna go into their community. I made reference to that to this whole thing about Asians being attacked, and I told you about how the Nigerians are being treated over in China. They are concentrated, quartered off in a certain area, and when they go off into venturing off or wandering off or exploring into other areas, they come under attack, sometimes being killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that goes another thing, showing that the government is piss lukewarm, because they should be complaining about that. Now, I think what happens, I've seen this before, Nigerians and other other countries would attack the people in their country like their people are being attacked in the other country. You had another case with Koreans in, I think it's Ethiopia, while at a certain time they wouldn't allow native Ethiopians in the restaurant or the bar or something to that effect. Well, they should have been ran the hell out of the country. It should have been ran the hell out of the country. So That's Pianki's view on that.
Well, it's a wild one out there because Los Angeles.
And the same thing with these people coming across the southern border. Blacks mm-hmm. ain't saying shit about that. Your leaders are not saying nothing. They mute. Matter of fact, I told you that one. Well, you can go on there. You can research their position, votesmark.org. You can type in a candidate's name, politician's mm-hmm. name. Their picture pop up. Click the picture. Then you got everything from their bio, their speeches, where they're getting their funding from, their position on topics like taxes, like immigration, like guns, like education. Look at these black politicians' position on immigration. Look at their position on building protection on the southern border like a wall.
Mm-hmm.
They're against building a wall. They want refugees that attend high school to be able to go to a state college free. These Negroes are completely out of their damn minds. It's got to be. What else could it be? If you were to take part of their brain and put it under the microscope, it would probably be little cells walking around picketing saying we out of our minds. Because mm-hmm. the actions that they show in a full-size human being, it's an action of somebody out of their mind. That's like when you vote for these candidates and don't ask them these questions. You got some candidates. You got a woman down here in Louisiana is running for that seat that the guy that went to work for Biden, he running for his seat. And she refused to ask the question so people can find out where the hell she's coming from. Cedric Richmond. And actually, blacks in these states that's conservative, they got these Negroes running as a Democrat, get all kind of help from Democratic Party. And they are voting for people that's going to put things in place that's actually against their well-being. I don't understand it. I really, truly don't understand it. It just don't make no damn sense. It's a lot more complicated than 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Mm.
So I'll hang on and listen.
Well, let me ask
you
something. In St. Louis, are black African-American at least? Not Nigerian or somebody from Africa. Are African-American convenience store owners visible?
No, they don't mess with that no more. They sold them all out.
Mm.
The generation, I knew the one in Kansas City. They sold it out. The kids don't want to mess with that. You know, and really, to tell you the truth, I don't blame them. I wouldn't want my kids messing with fooling with that anyway. It's too much other things that's offered too much money and for a whole lot less headaches than running a convenience store. You can't compete with a Walmart. I don't care what you do. I don't care what mm-hmm. card you throw on the table. You're not going to compete with a Walmart. Hell, Walmart's buying up all the dairy farms. So there go your milk source.
Right.
Whole Foods
is hiring.
Well, you
know, convenience stores are just that. People that don't want to, you know, people that don't want to go a mile away or more, you know, if they can just walk around the corner, walk to the end of the block, and get what they need.
Well, you don't have this. Communities not like that no more. You got hell. They got call a ride, come pick you up.
Uber, Lyft.
Community like that, but not blacks. See, if you're going to have something like that, you got to have a complete chain control of what it is that you're going to be selling to a great extent. And that just don't exist in the United States for white major concerns, let alone some small major concerns trying to delve off into those areas. Now, you can have some specialties mm-hmm. like Vertical Garden that's supplying cilantro and hydroponic lettuce for health restaurants like Salad Station that's down here in Louisiana. That's not the run-of-the-mill lettuce that they sell. That's a special lettuce. You see the same thing in Subway and some of their salads that they sell. Those are special lettuces.
Okay.
That's not growing out no field. Yeah, you can get involved in that, but you got to have a health. See, but you're not going to be able to cater just to blacks because blacks are not into those health purposes like you find in other ethnic groups. They're not going to come in and sit down and eat no salad. You have some. But you just can't cater to that sum. You got to broaden your base of consumers, which is going to consist of everybody.
That's true.
But no, that Korean woman murdered that girl. You didn't kill her, you murdered her. Well, the girl was walking away. She came out to pay for the product that she had in the backpack. That's the way they do here in the United States. That's the way some consumers do it in the United States. She wasn't trying to steal it. She wanted to pay for it. So she should have been charged with murder and some more.
Well, see, that's another reason.
And like I said, I'm going to say it one more time. Repeat. That's the damn.
She was charged with the involuntary manslaughter, and that's what she got convicted on.
Well, she should have been charged for murder. It's clear cut. I'm sure that the prosecutor had access to the tape. Hell, if you are a concealed carry, wait a minute. If you're a concealed carry and you're on the street and somebody come up to do you harm and they push you, we just had a case on it. They turn around and walk away. Well, you're not supposed to kill them, right?
Right.
Then you have a case
but
like that.
But the point I'm making we're not, in Los Angeles at that time, black folks were not, didn't have any say-so in the political process. This, who's going to be the DA? Who are the judges?
Well, that's a whole different
but
story
they
right
did.
There. But it should have worked.
The Korean business people did.
Yeah, but I understand that. And, you know, I understand where you're coming from. With the Career and the Business Association. But the only thing left that business association exists is you continue to buy products and put money in their hands in your neighborhood. If not, they wouldn't exist. But you've seen the same case with that parking space incident where the woman parked in the spot and the guy that worked for the store or whatever came over and questioned her about being parked in the spot. I think it was for handicap. You seen what result? The husband came out and pushed him.
About a couple of years ago, I remember that case.
Yeah, the husband came out and pushed the guy on the ground, and the husband was turning around or retreating, and the guy pulled out a gun and shot. Well, he was charged with what? What was he charged with?
You know what? I forgot
he
what
was
he charged was
charged with murder.
Yeah, but you know what? At first, when the sheriff had the case, he wasn't charged. But then the high-profile stink politically. Then he got charged with, I had to look that up, but you're probably right, murder.
Yeah, but
I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, so that's what happened. Now, I'm gonna see what Anderson talks about. It has got some relevance, but it can't apply to as many areas today in 2021 as it possibly could have in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But you just didn't have the mechanism to do it in the 70s. You didn't have the mechanism. I'm saying black in general did not have the mechanism to pull that off in the 90s. And they still don't today because they just don't indulge in those areas of food production. They don't do it. You know, one thing that you need to keep an eye on is the money that black farmers have been allocated to them in this recent presidential administration. Let's see what happened with that. See where it goes. So I think what you're doing is you're trying to make a hockey player play basketball. He don't want to play basketball. He wants to play hockey. A ballerina. A ballerina don't want to be a swimmer. She wants to dance.
So in other words, the black person wants, on a critical mass rate, they want to be consumers and not merchants.
Well, everybody's going to be a consumer because they have to consume something in order to survive.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, it's not saying that they want to. I mean, that's a human trait. They got to consume something to survive. You know, I can name a lot of areas that you don't see black. Look at your sympathy orchestras. Chicago Sympathy Orchestra. Hell, them people starting off over $100,000 a year. You see no blacks on the floor. You may see some up in the vocal area of the performers, but on the floor in the instrumentation, you see no blacks. So why come black society is not instilling into their children to move into those areas? Now that theory is something that could be.
That's true, because we're overloaded in athletics. We're overloaded in entertainment. We got enough barbershops. We got enough hair salons.
You're absolutely right on that.
We got enough preachers out here, too.
Well, preachers are out there preaching fire and brimstone and exploiting for monetary reasons, so on and so on. Those people there ain't going to do anything. That's another thing. See, you talk about how many blacks are in the country. But see, you got to start going through a phase of nutrition, eliminating people. Preachers ain't going to do jack. Yeah, a lot of them are not going to do jack. You're only going to have, in any ethnic group, you're going to have a certain percentage of people that take on these sort of tasks, these sort of endeavors. They all don't do it. Hell, you look at Koreans in L.A., I bet you got Koreans back in Korea, right? They all didn't come over here.
Oh, no. Somebody,
in many cases
of right
time, you're
up.
Talking about something that started within families and went on. That's why I come to Rockefeller's control so much stuff at the turn of the 17th, coming out of the 17th century, 18th century. Hell, you're talking about families. That's family inspiration. Westinghouse, families.
Edison, you're right.
Family.
That's about the
Putin.
You're right. Family.
Wait a minute. It goes further than that. Look at Putin. That's a family. Catherine, Queen Catherine. That's a family. Same thing in Ghana. The Ashanti Hennies. Those are
families.
Family.
Yeah.
Kufors in Ghana, families. Nigeria, you got families. Obasanjo, families. Aliki Dangote, those are families. That's generated within that family, within that DNA and gene of that family. Now you start to see things go off into other areas like artificial intelligence. Well, then you're starting to. You know, the funny thing you made mention with this Korean story, you said that the man's grandparents left it to him. The man's grandparents?
Yeah, in the George Floyd case, that family, the guy who's still living there, runs it now, he's third generation. His grandfather started the store.
Right. So what's going to happen is that he's going to marry, have a son, and then he's going to leave it to the son. And then it's going to be repeated.
About the George,
those families doing
that we're talking about, the only job he's ever had is with that store, the family business. That's the only job he's ever had.
Well, if it's paying money, I mean, that's what it's just like a tiger. When a tiger get a taste of human blood, he's going to prefer that over antelope.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings are going to run as fast as antelopes, a lot easier. You don't have to work as hard. That's a tendency. Human life takes on those tendencies and preferences when it pays off. Less expenditure of energy. Anyway, I'm going to sit back and listen.
Okay.
I'm trying to get you another story
about,
by the way.
All right. Today, Latasha Harlins and 5,907 miles to the five floors. The Korean family, for people that missed it, let me play the clip on what happened with Latasha Harlins 30 years ago.
People don't know who she was as an individual. They don't know.
They just know that she was just a young black girl who was worth $1.79. They don't know. Latasha would always talk about when we got older, we could own businesses. Because every time we go into a store, they either following us, giving us dirty looks, disrespecting us. Don't you want to have something on your own? She wanted to be a lawyer, so that's what she was aiming for, to get good grades. She had all A's. She just tried a little bit harder. She just didn't want to end up a statistic. Sometimes I think, how did I get this far and she not here? I know she'd be married by now. She loved the fellas. She probably would have two, three kids by now. She'd be an awesome mother. She was a loving person. I still appreciate her for being who she was back then.
This grainy security camera videotape graphically depicts the last few moments of 15-year-old Latasha Harlan's life.
Store owner Soon Ja Do thought 15-year-old Latasha Harlan's was going to steal some orange juice.
She had the money in her hand. You can see the money in the videotape. And the suspect grabbed the backpack, and there became a physical altercation over the backpack. And as our victim turned to walk away from the scene, the suspect raised a weapon and shot the victim in the back of the head.
Latasha was an A student, honor roll student. She got money every week for her allowance, so she did not have to steal orange juice.
The store clerk, a Korean woman, is now in jail. The black community is outraged over the killing. The NAACP is demanding the clerk be tried for murder.
Stop killing our children! We want justice!
It is not a time for rhetoric, which serves no purpose other than to fuel the fire. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire that's already burning. It is my opinion that Mrs. Do is not a danger to the community, and that she is not going to reoffend.
I know a criminal when I see one. I know a person who presents a danger to the community when I see one. When I don't, I treat that person as something other than that.
She got away with murder.
I damn sure hope so, that there would be all the hell in the black community.
Somebody would care.
So stand up and see this insanity for exactly what it is. Black people once
walk
again being unjustly treated by this
family.
We don't pick cotton anymore and cut sugar cane. Our lives is not worth anything.
You know what, I was going on a rant, I didn't have my mic open. Okay. Well, I got it open now. Okay. Let me see. Okay. I'll call this person after the podcast. So anyway, from Seoul, Korea, or from Korea to Los Angeles, is 5,907 miles. So how is it that some people can travel over 5,000 miles to take advantage of a business opportunity in a black neighborhood, whereas people that live within 1 square mile of where Latasha Harlan's was killed, how come those people can't see the opportunities that are within that community? What had, you know what, if a church bought that convenience store and hired people like Latasha Harlins to work in the store? What about that idea? And within that 1 square mile, I'm pretty sure, particularly with the density of Los Angeles, California, there were probably at least 10 churches, 10 black churches, that had the resources to buy that store. There's enough college degrees and high school diplomas within that neighborhood to have bought that store. But for some reason, I don't know if you can explain it, 619-768-2945. We're talking about Latasha Harlins, gone 30 years now. George Floyd. The parallels between the two is two people killed at 30 years apart. One was killed inside a convenience store. One was killed outside of a convenience store owned by immigrants.
In 1992, the Los Angeles riots tore through the city, bringing complete destruction to the community and its businesses. As the world watched, news stations played over and over again the brutal video of Rodney King being beaten by the police and the acquittal that came a year later, leading most to believe that this was the only reason behind the city's anger. But what so many people didn't see on the news was that just 2 weeks after the Rodney King beating, there was another brutality caught on camera, one that fueled racial tensions in LA and had rioters shouting the name Latasha Harlins. Latasha Harlins was born in Illinois on January 1, 1976. When she was five, her mother and father moved the family to Los Angeles, California, in the south area of LA. But just 2 years after the move, Latasha's parents got a divorce. Her father left town, and Latasha and her two younger siblings stayed with their mother. Tragically, not long after, Latasha's mother was found murdered outside of an LA nightclub. Latasha was 9 years old. After her mother's death, Latasha was put in the care of her grandmother and aunt who raised her and her brother and sister. As a kid, Latasha was described as being fun and full of energy. She was an honor roll student and had dreams of becoming a lawyer. But on March 16, 1991, those dreams came to an end. It was Saturday morning in Los Angeles. The city of LA had been on edge for weeks ever since the police beating video of Rodney King was released to the news media just 13 days earlier. 15-year-old Latasha Harlins, who lived in South Central, decided to stop at the Empire Market near her house to get some orange juice. Empire Market was owned by Korean husband and wife Billy Hwang Kai Do and Sunya Do. The couple had bought the mini market a few years earlier and was just one of a number of Korean families who had been purchasing businesses in South Central neighborhoods since the early 1980s. Normally, Billy Hwang Kai ran the front of the store with his son, but that morning he was working on the outside of the market, so his wife, Sunya Do, was at the register. At around 10 a.m., Latasha entered Empire Market and immediately walked to the back refrigerator section of the store and grabbed a small $1.79 bottle of orange juice from the cooler. Latasha put the orange juice in the back pocket of her backpack and proceeded to the front counter with $2 in her hand. But before Latasha had a chance to show her money, Sunya Do accused her of trying to steal the juice. Sunya reached over the counter and grabbed Latasha's backpack. Latasha pushed back. Sunya then grabbed Latasha's sweater, and Latasha pushed back again, knocking Sunya down. Attempting to end the confrontation, Latasha tossed the bottle of oranges on the counter and walked towards the door. Seconds later, Sunya reached under the register, grabbed a .38 caliber handgun, and fired, hitting Latasha in the back of the head and killing her instantly. Court documents later revealed that Latasha had died with the $2 still in her hand. The entire incident was caught on surveillance camera. The killing of Latasha Harlins added to the already tense relationships between African Americans and Korean Americans in South Central during the 80s. In the book The Contested Murder of Latasha Harlins, author Brenda Stevenson noted that tensions had been building for years between the majority black community who lived in South LA and the Koreans who ran businesses there. Korean store owners believed black customers were dangerous and more likely to shoplift, while black customers accused Korean store owners of being racist and disrespectful. These beliefs from each side created anger and hostility in the community that sometimes turned violent. As the public debated both sides, Sun Ya-do and the case of Latasha Harlins went to trial. 51-year-old Sun Ya testified on her own behalf, claiming that the shooting was in self-defense and that she believed her life was in danger. Court documents show Sun Ya testified that although she could see the orange juice in Latasha Harlins' backpack, she remained suspicious, feeling that if Latasha had intended to pay for the juice, she would have had the bottle in her hand. Security footage proved Sun Ya's claim of shoplifting to be false, as it showed Latasha approaching the register to pay for the juice. The security footage also contradicted Sun Ya's claim of self-defense, as the video showed Latasha walking away during the time of her death. The jury found Sun Ya-do guilty of voluntary manslaughter and recommended the maximum sentence of 16 years. However, the trial judge, Joyce Carlin, threw out the jury's sentencing recommendation and instead sentenced Sun Ya to 5 years of probation, 400 hours of community service, and a $500 fine. Sun Ya received no jail time. Judge Joyce Carlin explained her decision in a statement at sentencing, saying, "Did Ms. Du react inappropriately to Latasha Harlins? Absolutely. But was that overreaction understandable? I think it was." Judge Carlin added that she believed it unlikely that Sun Ya would ever commit a serious crime again. After Sun Ya's sentencing, Latasha Harlins' family, as well as the community, was outraged. Denise Harlins, Latasha's aunt, held marches and protests demanding justice for her niece. But later, a state appeals court unanimously...
Okay, well, I haven't done the research on it, but, you know, one of the reasons why I played the Bowling on Baltic audio occasionally, and the Claude Anderson piece every morning is we know that the Korean Business Association, we know that they're definitely politically involved. And when you hear about that sentence, because that's when I hear about that sentence, what I'm hearing is, okay, the Korean business people basically helped bankroll the system into place. Thus, she didn't get any jail time. She got sentenced to 10 years, but it was a 10-year suspended sentence. That means no jail time unless you go out and mess up. Then they bring you back into court. Then they can give you the whole 10 years or any part of that 10. But so she, I mean, no jail time, 400 hours of community service. She had to pay for the funeral. And I think there was a civil settlement for $300,000. And we don't know how that was paid. So what I would like to know, you know, I'm not going to find it out right now, but maybe by the end of the week, because I'm sure in a place like Los Angeles, you know, is there a African-American Chamber of Commerce? I'm sure there is, because you do have black business people out in L.A. But how big is the organization, and how politically involved are they, you know, in the criminal justice system? You know, are they funding, you know, are they bankrolling elections? Things of that nature, which I'm sure some are, but I mean, when I heard that sentence, anyway, that's how I look at it. So anyway, Latasha Harlins, that's 30 years ago. I don't know if too much has changed. Um, in any event, that's it for today. Everyone have a good rest of the day.